Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, where we talk the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Kat Iris. She's a songwriter here in town who also works with a lot of other artists doing graphic design, social media, marketing, photography, videography, all that stuff.
If you are listening to this podcast on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast, where you can watch Kat perform her songs with us. It's a lot of fun. Subscribe to that channel. Check it out. One thing I'm curious about you. We have so many questions. This is one that we've been like really excited for because we have so many questions for you. First of all, on like the songwriting side of things, you, like Tom, write so fucking much. Like you just write. Your output is just crazy. What is your routine? How do you do that? Because I'm not that kind of person.
Well, I think it's really helpful to set attainable goals for yourself. If you start out your year thinking, I'm going to write 100 songs this year, like, that's insane. You can't, like, look at that in your brain reasonably and be like, yeah, that's something I can absolutely do. But if you break it down to, like, one or two songs a week and you have, like, a dedicated time that you do that in, it doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter if it's, like, the next freaking hit of whatever. Yeah. It just matters that you finish it because the muscle memory of doing it over and over and over and over again makes the next time you pick up the pen and the guitar so much easier.
Yeah, I do. When this conversation is had, oftentimes I feel as though people can kind of recoil at it. I do feel like art, making stuff, whatever you want to call it, it's like anything else. You just have to show up and do the thing. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, there is a mystery to it that I'll spend the rest of my life enjoying. But it is like anything else. You just show up and you just do the thing. And so I'm always in awe of the people who can stick to that and just do that really well. Because it's a hard thing. Like anything, it's a hard thing to just stick with something and say, no, this is what I'm going to do. This is my routine. And I do feel it's not that the quantity is king. It's just if you've done the thing enough times, you're going to inevitably get better at it.
I've heard this analogy once, and I cannot remember where I heard this, but someone made the comparison of it's like running a store. Or owning a shop, right? Like, if, like, you need to open the shop every day, right? And, you know, a lot of days, like, no one will come in. But if you don't open the shop every day, people will see it's never open.
Yeah.
Then no one's ever going to come in, you know? So it's, you got to keep it open every day.
Mm-hmm. And some days are more inspired than others. Like, I'll be the first to admit there's days that it's just you sit there and you stare at it and you go, well, I don't really know what I'm going to write here, but it really helps to just, like, I like to leave myself a lot of little jumpstart points that I can kind of use if I'm getting in, like, a rut and I'm not really, like, being productive about it. I have a really insane notes, like, page, essentially, that has, like, a bunch of, like, song starters that I've, like, thought of. I'm thinking about it, like, 24/7.
Are they starters that you'll use once and then kind of burn, or would you go back to them and they're just sort of a way in?
It depends. I think there's some of them that I feel like are extremely like niche, and whatever the song ends up being, it's just like, well, that's, I already wrote that song. I'm not going to say that again, but more like broader concepts that I have, like those are easier to go back to with like different states of mind.
That's another thing we've talked about a decent amount, but I'm always intrigued by it. There are so many ways in with songs. I do think that we can kind of compartmentalize songs and be like, hey, you know, most of them are love songs and most of them are this or that. But there's so many different ways in. And all my favorite songwriters, the songwriters I know and the songwriters I don't know, they can play with that. And there's a lot of give there. And it's you can cover anything in a song, which is beautiful. And I think the people who recognize that any angle that I want to take on this, I can keep it fresh, which is a hard realization to get to, as simple as that sounds. I think it's a hard place to get to. I think that's a really smart way of approaching it. I'm gonna start stealing that. This whole episode is just going to be us stealing your ideas. I think that's kind of what we're thinking.
Well, that's okay. Like, it's, you know, art is community property at the end of the day, right?
Totally. So there you go. That's it. That's a really beautiful way of thinking about it. Like, my whole background and a lot of what I love out of music is traditional music and the folk process. And it's all that. I mean, it's all just repurposing and finding your value in that thing. And I do think that obviously that's most explicit in that kind of music, just because it's this weird thing where I think a lot of times when people hear folk music, at least in the last, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, they think of the music that kind of came out of the folk revival and, you know, someone singing sort of, you know, beautiful melodies with an acoustic guitar, that kind of thing. But in my head, I mean, that's not what folk music is, a process, and it's a process of translating ideas. And that's something that even if you're not working within the framework of the folk idiom, you know, even if you're not looking at a traditional song and saying, how can I arrange this for myself? You can use that process. That skill set works in any kind of music. And the people who I think recognize that, they can make the most interesting stuff, because you don't, I think what happens for people, anyone who makes things, there's this terrifying moment where you sit down to put pen to paper or however you're going to capture that. And there's nothing there. And that moment, I think, is so scary for people. I think it's just absolutely terrifying. And
I'm used to it.
Well, that's the kind of stuff that makes people not continue.
Exactly.
And that's why I try really hard. Again, I'm also like insane, and I think about music like 24/7. I am certifiable. Mm-hmm. So there is that too, where it's like, I'm just like driving to work and I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. that's like in my head. And then I'm just like, you know, set like,
yeah.
I use Siri like all day long, where I'm just like speak it to it and I'm like, hey, write a note about this.
That's
and then
really
I
smart.
Just go back to my notes later and then I put it where it needs to be. But if I don't like get the thought out while I'm having it, mm-hmm. I'm going to be.
Yeah, the phone situation has been huge for me over the years, because to me, my notes app is like crazy persons. So that's huge for me. And then I also, my whatever they call it, your recording app where you can just record whatever. It's so
mine's
amazing
a scary
that we live. Oh yeah, same. But I, you know, that tracks back for me for, you know, around the time Ryan and I met. I've got stuff from, you know, when we first started playing together, which is, it's so cool to like be able to have that. But it's just such a great tool. I love having that. Kind
you
of
ever
thing.
Like go through your voice memos and scroll back really, really far, and then you like hear something that you were working on like 5 years ago, and you're like, oh shit, yeah, I remember that. That's yep. always yeah. a trip.
I did that fairly recently when I was going through all my songs. I was like, and then yeah, I just
then,
did this a
but
little
then
bit
sometimes
more.
You find, sometimes you find like a gem and you're like, oh mm-hmm. shit, why did I stop working on that?
Yeah, completely forgot about it. Yeah. And that's what I was doing that so much, where I was starting things and then not finishing them, which is why I started setting those like regular goals for myself to finish things, because I was just, if it wasn't feeling like immediately easy and perfect, like it's very easy for me to just be like, nah, that's, I'm just giving up on that. So yeah. I've been trying to be very intentional about not giving up on things so easily if they don't come easy to me, because I'm very good at doing that.
That's one thing I've learned. I probably learned it a long time ago, is there's a lot of value in just finishing the thing, even if the thing sucks.
Exactly.
And I really think that there's something to that, because then you get accustomed to finishing the thing. Again, this is so, I feel like a lot of this stuff is so like common sense, but when you're in it, it doesn't feel like common sense. When you're in it, it's like, it feels like a battle. So,
cause it's supposed to be art and it's supposed to be inspired and it's supposed to be, you know, what you do. So you should just be doing it, and it shouldn't have to be work, but it is work.
But all of the greatest artists that, all of the artists that I think are unequivocally the greatest artists, the artists that I look up to the most and that I think have the most powerful output, they all, without exception, view it in that same way. And they all recognize that you just have to show up and you just have to do the thing. And it is, there's to me, there's nothing more potent and there's nothing more inspiring in life than watching someone who you look up to and on that artistic level do the thing their way. And maybe it's very close to the way you do it, maybe it's not, but the commonality, the common thread that's there with all of those people is they just show up and do it. And that, I think, is it's the hardest thing, because when you haven't gotten what you perceive to be a good song in a long time, you're like, is it really worth it? Do I need to spend this 10 minutes and chuck away at this? You know, it can really beat you down, but
that's why you got to keep it fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to give yourself silly little prompts and other things like that, that just, this is going to be the stupidest thing that I've ever done. Mm-hmm. So that way there's no expectation going into it. And you're just like, oh, okay, this is going to be some dumb thing. And I did that with, Tom and I will like sometimes like challenge each other with stuff like this. We're like, oh, I'm going to go like take a shower, like be done with the song by the time I get out of the shower.
That's a great idea.
So like, that's like fun. And then I was writing this when I was like, oh, this is going to be like a silly little song about how like my dog is my shadow. Like he's always everywhere I need to be. And then I wrote it in like 10 minutes and then Tom came out of the shower and he was like, wait, this song is... But then, of course, I love a good melancholic twist to things. Yeah. So it was, of course, very sad at the end. But
of course, of course. Any song about a dog kind of has to be. You know?
It has to have that little twist at the end. But it was ended up being a song I ended up loving. And it was just like a dumb little prompt that I gave myself.
That's
and it
beautiful.
Just worked out.
Yeah. Another thing I've learned as well. That was a voice crack there. No one paid attention to that. Another little thing that I've noticed, too, is, and this is, again, something I kind of came to a long time ago. The time in which it takes the thing to get out is completely unrelated to the quality of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
totally.
For a long time, I think people who start doing art, that's not how they feel. They feel like the thing has to show up fully formed and completely there in order for it to be the quality I want it to be. And everything else is just, it's taken too long. And I really genuinely don't think that there's any relationship there. I think it's just some come through the door quicker than others. And you just kind of have to roll with that and understand that that's the way things are. Yeah, it's hard. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, because again, we can talk songwriting all day long. And poor Brian, Brian does a lot of arranging and stuff, but he's not a songwriter really. So I know this is not
my wheelhouse.
You could change that.
Yeah. You should, honestly.
I don't really have the desire to. I'm like, we've talked about this before, but I'm not like a lyrical person at all. Like when I listen to music.
You can write instrumentals.
Yeah, I do sometimes. And it does relate, like songwriting and composing, but...
Well, then you just got to start giving those to people who write the lyrics, and then you got to
co-write. There you go. That's smart. Yeah. We're in Nashville, damn it. Come on. This could be your whole career.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Work on it.
Yeah, there's plenty of people who write words, and the melody parts sometimes the really hard part
that
for
would
people.
Be interesting to try. I've never tried to like someone just gives me a set of lyrics and I try to write the music to it. That'd be interesting to try out.
You can do it in reverse too. Give them the music and have them write the lyrics too.
I feel like that's true. I feel like that's a lot of times.
I've kind of done that before in bands I've worked in the past.
Yeah, especially when you're younger. What I guess we'll kind of circle back around for just a quick second, because I am curious about this. When you are writing, do you tend to be lyric first, or do you tend to be melody first?
I think, in like a weird way, it's both. Where I have not necessarily like a guitar melody, because I'm at best a very mediocre guitar player.
That's all you need. Let's be honest. That's all you need.
Yeah, I know like 7 chords. Got it. But
and
I
that's
have
like 99% of every song that's ever been written. So you're okay. Yeah.
Oh, right there. But otherwise, it's just kind of, I write mostly lyrics first, but then sometimes, if I'm just like driving around, I'm just thinking about it all the time. And sometimes like the words and the melodies all come to me at the exact same time. And I'm just like, oh yes, here's this, here's this, here's this. And
that's such a good feeling. I love that feeling.
Yes.
I love that to death when for whatever reason it comes together. Like there's not fishing one way or the other. Oh, it's such a good feeling.
It's just like I think of something like lyrically, but then I think of it in the cadence that it ends up coming out in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So but it's not necessarily like I wrote the words. I'm like, all right, now how does this have to sound? Like a lot of the times I hear the words as they sound.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah. The other thing that I always think about with music, which is really interesting, is what's important is the sound of the word. And I know this seems like such a basic thing, but the important thing is how the word sounds. And you can have the right word that has the right number of syllables or that even says the thing you want to say, but if it doesn't sound right, it's just not going to work. And so much of music is, it's not even about the sort of intellectual part of lyrics. It's about how do these words sound and what do they elicit in you when you listen to them sung. And that's something that I really, really, I think people who do this really well are all kind of on the same wavelength with that. It's about the presentation of that and how those words present in that way. There's a correlation between that and a lot of different things in art, but that's really fascinating too. When you get the right word, it's so good.
Oh yeah.
The right two words. Oh, it's the best. I love that.
And that's like an art in itself where creating the impact that you want with the words that you're using depends a lot on the other devices that you're using around it. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you really want something to hit at the end of the line, having like a bunch of inner rhymes that match up with kind of like push that emphasis on that sound that you really want to hit mm-hmm. at the very end there, like those kinds of things. I love doing that kind of things. I love doing, you know, lyrical like frameworks where the beginning verse kind of matches the end verse,
but it, like, for that too.
It like wraps around in like a different way. Mm-hmm. I love inner rhymes. I love near rhymes that just like pull on something that just feels like you weren't going to expect that word to come out, but it worked.
And I love when you set up a rhyme and you don't, and you do the trick, you know, you do the, kind of throw the wool over the audience's eye. There's so many different approaches in that way, but I do agree that those are the things that make music songwriting just so great. But that's where I think, which is an interesting point to get into, that's where I think songwriting and singing start to bridge, where a good singer can take well-written words and make them sound right. Again, I know this is kind of abstract, but that's really where I feel like there is overlap between the skill of songwriting and the skill of performing. Good performers, good singers can make those words sound the way that they should. And this doesn't mean that there's one way to do that. There's so many different ways in, but there's nothing better than when someone can do that. I mean, again, it's just, I fucking love that. It's so great.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many examples of well-written songs that have been done multiple times by people and have been like hits both times, like Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You.
Yeah.
Great example of, she did it, had like a great way to present it, but then Whitney Houston took it, also did it, huge success because she was also very good at like taking like the cadence and the phrasing of things and making it very emotive.
Yeah. Wow. I just love a good singer or a good guitar player or anyone playing a melody. I love when you can get it to sound the way that just, it sounds right. And again, it doesn't mean that there's a particular way you need to do it, but when it sounds right, when it sounds like there's no other way you could do it, I love that. So another thing that I know we wanted to pick your brain about, besides being a fantastic songwriter and having that be a big part of your world, you also work with a lot of artists and do a lot of, I don't even know the best way to say it, but like a bunch of other shit for other people, which I mean,
what? Because you work for Live Nation, right?
I work for like a subsidiary of Live Nation. Oh, okay. So it's an artist management company, but I'm like a marketing manager with that.
Gotcha. So my understanding is that's kind of like graphic design, social media, that kind of world.
Like album campaigns.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then I have been weaseling my way into doing photography and videography at
those
too.
So yeah.
I try to wear a lot of hats because it's fun to do.
Yeah, and I think the more well-rounded you can be, especially in this day and age, the better. I mean, not even because you can be more successful, but just because I think it's more fun that way. You get more out of it. Like there are people that obsess over one element of life. And when Matthew Weldy was on here, we were talking about this with him. There are some songwriters that he knows where their entire world is just songwriting and they don't do anything else. Now they're incredible songwriters, but because it's so all encompassing for them, it sounds sort of cynical to look at it this way, but the success isn't really there because they're so tunnel visioned on just this thing. And not only do I feel like you get more bang for your buck if you can be multifaceted in that way, but you also have more fun, I think. And like even just the silly podcast, like it's fun to figure this stuff out and figure out how to do it. Is that something you've always been interested in, or is that something that kind of just showed up, the interest in all of these other aspects of being a musician and being an artist?
I think I look at the world as there's all these opportunities to do all of these different things.
Yes.
And it's like kind of overwhelming because it's like there's not enough time in your whole life to do every single thing that there ever was. But yeah, I'm going to try. And so,
I love that.
So I will try most everything once to like see if I like it and see if I do it. And I just can't really sit still. So like I started doing photography and stuff at live shows because I'm like, well, I love music and I'm going to music, but then I'm like, I could be doing something else while I'm here.
Okay. So it was like a production. It was like a productivity problem. You're like, oh my God, I need to be doing something.
Yeah, I have to maximize what I'm doing right now. Which funny. Is like, you know, not always the best thing, because sometimes you do need to kind of just like chill and sit still. But I have a very difficult time with that, where I book myself out a lot. And I just go, I'm overwhelmed. But
everyone has their own level for that kind of thing. It can be hard because you got to find where your line is. And some people it's easy to find that line, and other people they chug away it's a lot of pain and maybe anguish that gets you to find that line. But do you feel like for you, you've kind of started to find it, or do you?
I still push my own limits a lot, which is, I don't necessarily think a bad thing all of the time, but I do. My days are like normally pretty highly structured, which I think helps like maximize what I'm doing. So like I said, I have set time that I write, but then I also have, you know, I teach that dog training class, but then I also take classes, but I'm also in an agility league, and I'm doing that kind of stuff like 3 or 4 days a week, but then I'm also writing, but then also I have my full-time job that sometimes I do stuff after work at. So I try to structure that and balance that out in a way that is not normally overwhelming, but
but it can be.
Especially when like it's the actual baseline of all of those commitments is not that much, but when there's the other things that pop up, like, oh, there's like 3 shows happening this week that I have to go to, but then I also still have all the other things on top of it too. That's where it starts to get like a little much, but
yeah, I can certainly, that sounds like my life at the moment, which again, it's like, I can't complain about, you know what I mean? No. Like maybe I'll bitch to these guys about it, 'cause you know, they're my friends and I like bitching sometimes. I think that's kind of the only way to do it is to, I found in my life, I have like 6 things that I obsess over, and it's like, okay, well, those are the 6 things that you have time for and maybe don't have time for some weeks. And if you really want to have some other thing come into life, you got to really want it, you know?
Yes. It's maximizing your time is a skill in and of itself, because it's easy to just not do things also, which is like, you know, the decision paralysis, if you will, where you're just like, well, there's way too many things I have to do. But that's why I have my like very set schedule with it. Like I leave my job and then I go immediately to whatever pre-planned activity I have for the night, and then I go home and then I do whatever like home centric activity it is I need to do, whether it's something boring like chores or writing or something like that.
I do feel like that's the way to go. Don't get me wrong, I love days, as infrequent as they are, where I'm not doing anything. I can really, really get behind one of those days. It's been a while, but that's how I feel the healthiest, is when I'm in that zone. Of all of the different elements of what you do on the sort of artist managerial level, what to you is the most fun, and what to you is the hardest? And are those the same thing, or are they different things?
I think I manage like a team with a couple people on it, so it's just like managing everybody's workloads and also still meeting all of the deadlines can be kind of difficult, but there is a lot of room for creativity as well. So we're brainstorming on an artist's new record that's going to come out later this year right now. And so like that's been super fun. We'll go and we'll sit down with them and we'll just go through every song, and we go, okay, here's like some short form ideas we've come up with. Here's like, we've come up with music video ideas essentially for every single song. Won't use them all, but it was just a good exercise to just keep your brain going. And that kind of stuff's really helpful when I go to look at my own stuff. And then I go, okay, so how would I approach this if I'm approaching it the same way I spend all day approaching everybody else's stuff?
Yeah.
That's gotta be a blessing. That's gotta be really nice.
It is. And you get to see how every other element of the industry works too. So that's also been super helpful. Not that I've really done anything with it as of yet, but eventually I'll do something with it.
And that's, I think, a really beautiful way to approach it. For myself, like my background really is in teaching. That's what I've done for years now. But I took a little detour last year for a little bit. For 6 months maybe, I started working at a music publishing company, because that's really what my background is in. And I thought, okay, well, I kind of hit the ceiling over here at this teaching gig. Let me try this out and just see. And I kind of fully intended to have that be my path for life, just because you make more money and there's more of an established path there. I love teaching, but it can feel a little scary sometimes. But I found for myself, and I think this is very different for different people, that it made me kind of bitter. I didn't like that I was doing all of this stuff for other people's musical career. Not because I had anything against doing that for other people. Like, it's kind of funny when I contrast that against what we're doing now, because with this, I adore doing this. I just love doing this so much. And it's kind of the same idea of just, this is for all the people that we love and want to have on and hang out with and put their music out there. But for whatever reason, that world kind of made me a little bitter, made me very bitter. And I wonder, what do you think, as someone who it doesn't seem like has that outlook on it, what do you think keeps it a positive influence in your life?
I think there's always something to learn mm-hmm. from everything. Everything that you do in life, you can learn something from it. And I have the privilege of working on such a wide variety of like genres and, you know, skills and notability from everything from like super like high profile legacy acts to developing acts mm-hmm. from like rock to country to pop to EDM.
That's really cool.
So you get to just see how all the pieces all kind of are the same, even if they are just like a different color, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, like, yes, if I had like all of that time to invest in my own stuff that I'm spending on everybody else's, yeah. like if I looked at it that way, it would be probably just like to my own mental detriment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Where it's a lot healthier, I think, to look at it as there's always something to learn here. And I do learn, and I've learned so much because mm-hmm. every new artist that I work on is a whole new perspective on things that I haven't thought about before.
Do you find generally you have more fun with those legacy acts that maybe carry more weight in your head, or that you like being in on the ground floor with the newer acts?
I think most of the newer acts are, I don't want to say hungrier, but they're mm-hmm. trying to establish themselves. So they're way more open to trying different ideas and stuff. So if like we put together, you know, a shot list for a legacy person to do for their new record that's coming out, mm-hmm. most of the time you're not going to get them to do that for mm-hmm. many reasons. One, sometimes it's they're like 75 years old. That's just not something that they're capable of doing. Sometimes it's, I don't need to do that. Sometimes it's just, they're never even going to look at anything that they get sent because it's just how it is. Mm-hmm. So most of the time the younger acts are, and like the more developing acts are open to both like criticism and feedback and ideas. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to kind of try whatever it is because they want to get to that point where they are the legacy.
Yeah.
Act.
So there's just more give there. It seems like you can kind of have a more fun.
And most of them are younger too. So mm-hmm. they are, it's less like IT support and more like you're talking to somebody at the same like level of knowledge of like TikTok existing. Mm-hmm. So
got that's one of the things that's been huge for us has been the social media aspect of this, because as a participant, with the exception of Instagram, which I'll kind of scroll through while I'm sitting on the toilet, that's sort of my relationship with social media. I'm as a consumer, I'm just not really active. Now as a musician, you really need to be on top of that stuff. So for years and years and years, I've tried a great many things, as we all have, to establish yourself in that way as best you can. And so with something like this, it's been fun to sort of try to let go in a way and try to just be open to let's try this and see how this works. And mm-hmm. let's go down this rabbit hole and just see, is this, it could be silly little things like what time do we post on TikTok versus what time do we post on Instagram? Like, again, so many dumb little things that who knows if they make a difference. But
how do you feel about this? Does that kind of stuff matter? Like times you post? And because sometimes we get, we'll obsess and debate over like all these little fucking things.
At the end of the day, it's like, just keep this, as long as the schedule stays the same, keep this.
Sometimes in my head, I'm like, does all these little things really fucking matter? Or like, is that something you take into account when you're kind of working on like stuff with an artist, or no?
I mean, we do to a degree. So we'll look at historically when things have been posted and when the audience is most active and all that stuff when we put together, you know, audits of everyone's platforms. So we go through like TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube,
a lot of like going
Spotify,
through analytics and stuff.
A lot of like analytics, and we use that kind of stuff to inform it. But also at the same time, I was just talking to Tom about this yesterday because somebody was picking my brain about it at a dinner last night. And I was like,
I'm sorry that we're here to bug you about it.
No, this is a way like it's a very fun. Acceptable it's a very acceptable venue, and that was fine too. Always happy to talk about it because it is so interesting and it's so relevant to everybody, but it really is sometimes just completely random. Mm-hmm. It's you'd never know what's going to be the thing that's going to be the next big thing. You could sit there and you could push it like 200 times on your page, the exact same freaking lip syncing video, just in a different place. And that works. Like that's worked for many mm-hmm. people. I have some people I work with who that's how they've ended up having any kind of platform at all, getting signed to major labels. All that stuff is mm-hmm. just being really persistent with the one thing that has like kind of worked a couple times and then it's just taken off. And then other people have done that 1,000 times and it's gotten 300 views each time. It's just, it's so random. And the whole, all of these companies, like they really gatekeep how like their algorithm works.
Yeah,
because
for
that's how
sure.
they make money. Is and they that, keep you guessing and they keep you engaging with the platform. And
yeah, that was another thing. I mean, so working at the publishing company that I did, we would work quite a bit with that side of the kind of world that you're in. And that was something that was also very interesting on my end to see was nobody really knows.
No.
Like, again, like not to say that there aren't people who are incredibly good at it and have great skill sets in those things, but nobody really knows. It's a lot of guesswork.
It does seem like it is like a lot of guesswork, and sometimes it's just random. Is there any aspect of like social media content where you're like, oh, this does really matter? Like, is there any particular thing that does not seem random? Like any like common trends where it's like, oh, like content that has this sort of a thing in it, like that tends to do really well? Is it just
like slot the machine? Biggest thing, it is kind of like a slot machine, but the biggest thing really is like the artist actually being involved with it and mm-hmm. people feeling like it is like a genuine thing coming from the artist. Because
authenticity.
Yes. Yeah. We don't.
That makes sense.
Like I said, we'll work with people who are like, I'm never doing a direct to camera video. That's just mm-hmm. simply not something that is within like the scope of something I should ever ask some of these people. They're just not going to do it. But then, you know, sometimes they complain that things aren't doing well. And it's like, if you like, you know, had some kind of personal connection with your fans, like that's the kind of stuff that people really have latched onto. And if you think about a lot of the people who have, you know, gained a platform over mm-hmm. the last like 5 years that TikTok has been like ruling everything.
Yeah.
It feels like they're on FaceTime with you, just posting something and doing something crazy that may not even have anything to do with your music. It's just something that makes people feel like they have an insight into you and your life and who you are. And that's something that people can connect to.
Yeah. There's, I completely see where you're coming from. As a bit of an aside, which I think is funny. No one's going to care about this, but I'll say it anyway. I agree that there are a lot of people out there, and I'm kind of in this camp too. Like for my own music, I like having that wall there, and that's probably honestly something that's held me back and something that's not good. But I've always sort of I like having that that sort of relationship. That's just me though. This has been very different, which has been interesting, but. Like, for example, I follow Bob Dylan on social media, which it's always other people posting his shit, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like he's one of those people like no one's going to fucking like.
Yeah, but you know, it's not him either.
But then recently in the last year, there's been random times, totally random, where like he'll be posting. It's all videos of like other people's performance. So he'll post like a Django video or something mm-hmm. and everyone loses their mind. But it's hilarious because it's a video everyone's seen of Django playing whatever or of this mm-hmm. person playing whatever. And it's a video that's a song I love. And I think, oh, that's beautiful. But just knowing that he's on the other end of that is hilarious. Like, oh my God, like that. No. Like that's cool. Like that's cooler than to me, again, as someone who doesn't really participate in social media as a consumer all that much. There's something really cool about that I think is really beautiful in a weird way to know that, oh, like this person is, there's a participation here that I'm getting to witness. When you started doing this, did you have any background in this or was this something that you just, that you started from ground zero and built your way up?
I would say more so I had a background with like the graphic design aspect of the job, the video mm-hmm. editing, photography, all that stuff. And obviously, and our generation, we're all social media users. We know how social media works, which is a big part of the job is knowing all that. But I didn't really have any industry experience before. I, like, somewhat famously at my job, have gotten the job through, like, a LinkedIn Easy Apply. It was
That's fantastic.
Put in on it, and I just happened to get a call, and I happened to be the best candidate that they had, and got the job.
That's wonderful.
Nice. And I've been there for almost 3 years now. This year is 3 years, so it's been so much education on how the industry works, which has been, like, really cool about the way that our company's structured is we're all, like, very involved, and especially as, like, a project manager, I am touching every single avenue of the artist's career. I'm talking to their managers, I'm talking to the people planning their tours, I'm talking to the label, I'm talking to any, like, social media people that we have, capturing content for them and organizing that, I'm talking to their tour manager, making sure we get, you know, audio from the soundboard for, like, these specific shows, because we do this live stream with this, like, third party person. It's I'm touching everything, so I'm seeing how all of that
works together,
which is super cool.
On the graphic design side of things now, what is your relationship with that like at the moment? Are you still very hands-on with it, or is it more kind of spectating, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, at work, it's more of, like, directive at this point. I have a lot of knowledge with it. I've used Photoshop for over 10 years, so if people have, like, questions about how does this work, or, like, how am I want to do this thing with this, but I don't really know how to do this, I can, like, give instruction on that, but I do still do freelance work, so I still to scratch that itch.
Nice.
And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, just designing, like, album packaging and stuff where all the assets are already
made. It's time-consuming. I mean, that's the thing, is all of these different elements are so time-consuming. Like, for us, one of the big time-consuming, the biggest, far and away, biggest eater of time is editing. It's also because we just it sounds sort of goofy when you say it, because we're just doing a conversation and a couple performances every week, but it is really, really time consuming.
Brian it's consumed my life at this point.
Yeah, everyone kind of
trying to get one of these out every single week.
Yeah,
with all the audio and the podcast editing, and
it's been a lot.
Yeah, it's
a lot. Especially, I mean, now we're lucky. We're bringing in someone else. All of this up to this point has just been the three of us, which has been amazing. Just with kind of life and schedule, I know that these two guys have been just taking on so much of it right now, which is amazing that they can do that. For me, it's like I do like the social media side of things. And so just kind of segmenting these things off has been really good. I mean, we can all help each other out. Like, you know, if Brian has been working on the audio recording side of things and has really been working on editing for the podcast. Alexa's been working more on has been doing all the photography and videography and the lighting and all that stuff, and doing the editing for the performances. And you know, I've been doing the booking and stuff. So it's been great to see how everyone can, like, work as a team to get these things done, but they all just eat up time. And what do you find, as someone who is in the trenches every day, so to speak, what do you find with people where this is their world in music, is the biggest eater of time with all of those different aspects of dealing with an artist?
As in, like, on, like, the management side or from the artist perspective?
I guess both. I mean, again, like, I'm kind of an idiot, so I'm sort of curious about both.
Yeah, I mean, from at least, like, what we do as our team, we have a lot of people who are, like, highly specialized with everything they do. We have our, you know, creative team that handles, like, video editing, content capture, graphic design, all that stuff. We have people who do a lot of, like, posting and social strategy stuff. We have, like, a whole tour marketing department that determines, you know, they go through all of, like, the booking confirmations, and they get the routing for the tour, and then they give it to me, and I make sure that the creative team gets it so that they can build, like, the ad mat for it. And then we send that back to them, make sure it's all approved. We get the artist/manager, depending on who is the final approval there, their sign off. And then it goes off to the people who are deploying the social posts to get, like, the copywriting done and the posting done. So there's a lot of hands in the bucket for something as simple as just, like, a tour graphic.
I'm sure that's so, I mean, and again, I think that's the thing that saved us is, yes, we've all been sort of siphoned off to our little world, but I think being able to help each other out when we need it has been a huge blessing, because otherwise it's just a lot of work. Like, I really I'm so excited to have someone else come on and help us with editing, because I know that's going to make Brian's life so much easier.
He's like,
that
thank
poor
God.
Guy has been, yeah, that poor guy.
don't even get me started.
No, it is, like, good to
shout
have
out
people
to work.
There you go. Yeah, excited. What there you go. What for you as a songwriter, who are your biggest songwriting influences?
Well, it's, I have like a very, I would say like eclectic music taste. I know everybody says that. Yeah. It's like a very generic thing to say, but I grew up listening to like punk and metal music. So I have like that influence of just, you know, some of that, especially like metal music can be very orchestral and just like the arrangements of everything. And then I also obviously love like folk singer, songwriter, Americana, that whole world. So I think if I was going to name three, I guess, which is like a really evil, difficult
That's
thing
hard.
To do.
That's hard.
Maybe I'll make it five.
Yeah,
and
top
this
five.
Changes like,
there you go. Top five.
This changes so regularly too. I'm like, who have I just been like, you know,
oh, for sure.
True. Yeah. I always go through phases and stuff.
It's so much. So definitely like First Aid Kit. I have always been a huge influence since I like really started writing, which was probably around like, they were like a Swedish sister duo.
Oh.
So they are definitely like very firmly in like the alternative country Americana kind of space. But they are, their record that came out in 2017, I only ever listened to them because I had a professor in college who was from Sweden. Mm. And we were talking about, you know, different things we liked and stuff as like an icebreaker in class. He was like, you should listen to First Aid Kit. You would really like them.
That's fantastic.
So I said, okay, cool. And I went home and I did. And I was like, this is great. Holy shit. Wait, this is like life changing.
When you find something that hits you in that way, it's such a great feeling.
Oh my gosh. And that was what really did it for me was another like really big influence I have is Emmylou Harris.
Okay.
So love her. And they did a performance of one of my favorite songs of hers, Red Dirt Girl, at some prize ceremony where they were awarding her for something. They did a performance of the song and I was just blown away.
That's wonderful.
Just sold on it ever since.
That's great.
So the two of them, definitely super big influences, and he's taboo now, but Ryan Adams was a huge songwriting influence of mine.
Ryan Adams is a great songwriter.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of people of his time can get overlooked for whatever. I don't know why. And it sounds kind of silly saying that about him, but
he gets in his own way.
Yeah, he can, but he's a great songwriter.
Oh my gosh.
Fantastic songwriter.
Yes, I remember like, the first time I heard him that I like knew who it was that I was hearing in like 2012 or somewhere around there. It was just like, whoa, this is incredible. This is exactly like how I like to think about the world and think about things. And these are like the kind of vignettes that I like to see. And then to be able to see someone like paint it so succinctly is just
that's great.
Incredible.
So you got three.
That's three.
Who are the last two?
Okay, the last two. I would say Joni Mitchell is definitely up there. I think she's just has such an interesting approach to both writing as well as performing. And she's got some range. If you listen to the variety of kinds of songs that she writes too, it's very broad. Hmm. But they're also unique and you always know it's her.
Yeah, she's a very, very distinct artist. I mean, that to me is probably one of the biggest marks of artists that I love is not even necessarily that I'll use someone like Tom Waits as an example because I think he's a very good representation of this. I love the entire career of that man. If you go back to several decades ago versus, you know, whenever Bad As Me came out, it's been a while. That's a huge variety within his career, but every moment along the way, it sounds like him.
Closing Time is one of my top 10 favorite records of all time. I can't even name five because I had another one in my brain.
Who's the other one?
We'll come back to Tom.
Who's the other one?
It's a Scottish like rock band called Biffy Clyro.
I don't know that.
It's a very odd one out for like this listing, but I've just been such a big fan of theirs since again like early 2010s.
That is a great name. I love that.
Yes.
I've never even heard a song, but I'm a fan.
Yes, they also have range. They started as more of like a grungy kind of band. They started playing music I think around like the late 90s, so like kind of like tail end of like the traditional like grunge era that everybody thinks of, but their music has gone to like kind of like a more like pop sound over the years, but it's still like the songwriting, and again, like I just love Simon Neil, the lead singer who writes most of their songs, like his approach to like looking at the world. I love to see how songwriters kind of look at the world and then how I look at the world and go, I would have never thought to, you know, use those words to describe the same picture that we're looking at.
Yeah.
We can both be looking at a picture of a mountain, but you're seeing something completely different with your words.
That's what's so, that's what I think is so enthralling with art in general. I mean, this obviously transcends songwriting. There is nothing in life outside of maybe the love you have for loved ones that is as amazing as seeing someone represent that interestingly, where someone can present something, whether it's a song, whether it's film, whether it's a painting, whatever it might be. It could be a carved chair. It doesn't matter. But when somebody finds a way of presenting that in a way that makes me go, huh. Like, anytime I get a good cheating grin on my face with anything that someone's made, it's a good day. That I think is that might be the secret to life if there is one. Go, I guess, pivoting back to Tom, because God knows I could talk about Tom Waits all day.
Oh my gosh.
He is someone who not only sonically has he changed over the course of his life, but as a songwriter, I think that he's never been afraid to try different things and to go down different paths and see where this leads and sees where that leads. What are the big elements of his career that you feel like have rubbed off on you? What are the big ones?
I would say I also, I've obviously played all these songs tonight on acoustic, but when I hear how the songs are, there's like such a variety in how they all could sound. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily write to a specific style. I just write to this idea or concept I have in my head. And we're all informed by our entire experiences in life and how we approach everything. And that's why every artist is so unique, really, because they all look through their own specific lens that's been shaped by everything that they have like seen and done and all of that. And I think that with Tom Waits, just like his way of just looking at everything is so unique. Like there's really not another word for it. And nobody seems to have the same favorite songs by Tom Waits. Mm-hmm. It's always such a range of like, oh, I like this. I like this thing off Rain Dogs. I like this. It's always so different. A couple of friends of ours did like a Tom Waits tribute show. Mm-hmm. Like not, just
that
like a bunch
hard.
Of.
That'd it be hard because you're like, I'm missing. I want to hear all of Bone Machine. Let's go top to bottom. I want to hear all of Closing Time. You know?
But like all the ones that everybody was like picking, like, oh my God, this is like my absolute favorite song. Like I love this. And it's like all just from the whole spread of his catalog, whereas I feel like a lot of artists usually have like one or two records that everybody has latched onto. Yeah. But for him, that's like very inspiring because he has changed skins so many times in his music, and somebody loves every single part of that, and that's really cool.
That's that again. I think that's a really powerful through line in art in general, whether it's music with someone like Tom Waits, whether it's film with someone like Hitchcock or Fellini or whomever. I think that's the trick. I mean, I think the trick is just trying what you feel like you need to try. And that's a scary thing because people who are incredibly competent at what they're dealing with, there's such a pull to stay put. And the vast, vast, vast majority of creative people give in to that because it's so potent. But the people that I think can really transcend art, they're aware of the fact that you have to keep pushing. I mean, I think that's true of any world you're working within. Like, Dylan has a great quote on this. He said, "I never got to a place where I thought I was at somewhere." You have to realize that you're constantly in a state of becoming, and as long as you can stay in that world, you'll sort of be all right. And I think that's true. I think you have to just be present. And it's like all so much of the stuff we've talked about. It's so simple, and that seems like such an eye roll. Like, well, obviously, but it's true. And I don't think there's more of a secret to it than that.
No. Yeah. And like I said earlier, I always want to keep my little student hat on. Mm-hmm. If you feel like you don't have anything left to learn, like you're being an idiot.
Exactly.
There's so much that you can learn.
Yeah, it never ends.
Everything. It's very short-sighted and kind of, you know, closed off to think that you don't have anything to learn. And
it's more fun to look at it that way too. You just get more bang for your buck. It's more fun as like, a creative person.
I get not having imposter syndrome and stuff like that because I know we're all guilty of that to a degree, but it's also like why do you want to be the smartest person in the room that you're in? You're not going to get anything out of that.
Yeah.
You're just like at a plateau. I never want to be the smartest person in the room.
Do you find that as someone who has had relationships in some way, professional relationships in some way with big artists, and you've dealt with people who are very successful in their fields. Do you find that the people that you look up to the most, or that you just enjoy working with the most, have commonalities, or is it sort of just more of a random spread? Like, oh, this person's this way, but I like working with them. This person's a different way, but I like working with them. Are there any through lines there?
I think there's some people who just have a certain tenacity to them where they are just always working. They're always, you know, writing music or planning this kind of tour or this like specific part of their live show, or they're rehearsing or they're doing something like that. And there's always people who, like we've talked about, who reach a plateau and they hit that point where they're like, oh, I made it. And then they feel like they don't have to work anymore.
Yeah.
But the people who have stayed working, and they know that this could be fleeting. I could be done tomorrow if I don't keep doing
it's the fear.
Reason
You're
I'm
saying
here.
The secret is fear.
It could be fear. But no, it's also like a love for it. Like there's some of these, like I work with a bunch of like bluegrass people, for example, and bluegrass is like very community driven, but it's also like you need to kind of know your shit if you're going to be relevant.
Oh, for sure. That's a whole world that I at times have dipped my toes into. Again, I kind of like with country music, I come in through the back door because for me, it's a lot of my knowledge on that music. Once that music starts to form, that's where a lot of my musical knowledge goes away.
Yes, but and they're all just humble.
Oh yeah,
like but they're the it is best of what they do. Oh my god,
it is like a religion to those people to have that. And that's why, like, I almost feel like kind of an imposter when I do dip my toes in that way, because it is such an all encompassing thing.
Yeah,
that I always feel like, okay, like I can know the big ones and like, you know, fake my way through it. But that's kind of a lifestyle.
No, like so many of those totally. People started playing their instrument before they could walk. Like yeah. It's just crazy.
Yeah. It's one of those genres like where like the good players in that genre are like fucking next level top tier musicians.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then if you start looking around, you realize they're everywhere.
Yeah.
In the industry.
Well, it's a really hard genre to play. I think the barrier to entry is higher than other genres. So I think just because it has that sort of nature, it kind of weeds out a lot of the people that aren't as good.
Yes.
I think jazz is kind of the same way. Like, there's a lot of really good jazz players just because it is kind of harder to play than other genres, you know?
Yeah, it's not as entry-level accessible as, like, pop music,
totally.
Where you can just, like, do a couple things in your bedroom
and
call
like
it a day.
Yeah, or, like, rock or blues or, yeah.
Like, as you know where Tom's from, there is a, like, music festival that's a bluegrass festival. It's called Delfest. It's, you know, named after and in honor of Del McCurry. And I've always heard about Del McCurry. He literally plays music, like, 18 hours a day. He just plays music.
That's his entire life.
Yeah. He's, like, 90 years old. And he still is just, like, minimum, like, 8 hours a day playing music. Mm. Like, you don't get to that point unless you love it too. And so being able to just see the passion that people have and also that they are actually willing to work for it, like that's always very inspiring.
Another thing I wanted to ask you, one thing that I think is so fascinating about your life is that you are married to another phenomenal songwriter. And as throughout my life, not that I've had that long a list of serious relationships, no partner that I've ever had has ever been in that world. And so for me, it's always been a very personal thing. It's always been something that I can go to and kind of set, I can move myself away from the world and sit with it. How fun is that to have that back and forth with
awesome.
Someone that's as good at that thing as Tom is?
Yeah, it's always good to have one another brain to bounce ideas off of. And he's a very like unique and good guitar player. So that's always like, I'm selfish, but I'm like, oh, if I don't have to play the guitar because I'm not anywhere near as good as you are, that would be great too. But just having like another songwriting brain to bounce things off of. And we do write together a lot. So this song definitely needs a bridge and I just don't know where it's supposed to go to get there. And he'll pull out some like mm-hmm. progression that I would never have come up with on my own without just like bouncing it off of someone. It's like a built-in co-write that you have all day long.
I think that's really beautiful, though.
It must be nice.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's like a second musical brain at your disposal.
Yeah.
Well, Alexis, really you got to start playing guitar.
She can. She can play some guitar.
There you go.
Yeah.
A little bit.
See, there you go. So you're underutilizing your resources.
Exactly.
No, I get her input sometimes.
There you go.
Yeah, just again, as someone who's never had that in my life, I'd feel like, oh, that's got to, and I'm sure like anything, it carries its own pros and cons, you know, but I really do feel like it's got to be just a really fun, beautiful thing to have that, play there.
The nice thing with us is like our styles complement each other really well. We don't necessarily write the same kinds of songs, but it's complementary in a way that when we do write a song together, it's a lot. It just feels like fresh because it is like a mixture of our two different ways we would approach something.
Do you feel as though at this point in life you have a, and not that this has to be static, a voice, a writing voice that you've established? Or do you feel like every time you put pen to paper, it's a crapshoot? And not in terms of quality, but in terms of the voice that will come out.
I think the through line voice is normally the same. Like I've told you, I write so many songs. I average between like 30 and 50 a year.
I gotta go home and like.
That's crazy. Yeah.
But it's because I really have a very regimented schedule. And like I said, there's some of them I'm never going to play out for anybody because they're trash. But I sat down and I finished the song and I did it. And just like flexing that muscle all the time has also been really good in helping kind of shape like my approach to the songs, which I think has kind of created like a coherent voice. I feel like there's a lot of like commonalities in the kinds of things that I write, either if it's just like chord progressions I really always seem to like gravitate back towards, or subject matters, or just, you know, ways I would put words together that have kind of started to come together and form a sound. But in terms of like genre or style or anything that like that, that's more of a broad thing, because as we listed a bunch of influences, I like a lot of diverse things, and I like lots of people who have a lot of range with their style, who've been, you know, a rock artist, but they've also been like a folk artist, but they've also done like a weird, like kind of pop thing for a bit. And they've also done some like weird, like avant-garde, like noisy thing. And it's just, you don't need to pigeonhole yourself. So I always want to be evolving anyway. Yeah. And I always want to try to find the best, most devastatingly perfect way to say something.
That's a perfect way of framing that. For myself, my relationship to writing, like with all these things, has evolved. There was a time in life for a long time where I was much more regimented with it. And to me, I always use the analogy of it's like, I think of it writing like keeping the pipes clean. Mm-hmm. There are sort of two, in my mind, there are two forms of writing. There's writing to keep the pipes clean, to go through the process. So once you've done it, you know that you can do it. And then there's the moment when you're driving the car and the thing gets in your head and you're, oh, let me put this down. Let me remember this. Because you've kept the pipes clean and because you've gone through that process, you can do it. You can do the thing. And like I would force myself to write every day for years. All throwaway stuff. Like not maybe you sit down for 10, 15 minutes and just write, and maybe you keep one line. Like, yeah, that could be something. But I always imagine it. It's like ideas come through the door and they're puzzle pieces. And sometimes this thing fits with this thing. Sometimes this doesn't go with anything. Well, let's wait and see. That to me has been a really great way to imagine songwriting, because for a long time, I thought if the puzzle didn't come through all the way formed and complete, it was a lesser quality. But I just realized as time's gone on, it's like, no, sometimes you just get these things at different times.
I mostly get pieces at different times. Like I have woken up from a dream and had like a whole song in my head, like at least like the first half of a song, and I'm just like half asleep and I'm like, I need to write this down. But then I also like, wait, that like the melodies are too, so I have to like get the voice memo done, and then next thing I know I'm like, okay, that was at like 4 o'clock in the morning and now I'm up because I started writing a song.
I feel so thankful that we live in 2025 though, because the idea that I can just pull out my phone and it's there, I've got it. Maybe it goes nowhere, but the idea that I can capture that is such a weight off of my back. There are many aspects of living in the future that are pretty nice. That to me is the one every single day I am most thankful for. Like if that wasn't there.
Oh my gosh. It's easy to take it for granted because we've had it for so long, but to be able to just, you know, you have an idea, you don't have to go find a freaking roll of tape.
Yeah. And oh my God.
Plug it in something and find a microphone. And then next thing you know, you've already forgotten the thing you were doing. So,
yeah.
It's easy to forget even when you go and record something.
For sure. Yeah. And forget how to get on that wavelength. Like, you know, even if you have the notes and the words and all that stuff is there, to dial back into that wavelength can be hard. But I do think that's a great tool for doing that. More often than I'd probably like to admit, when I'm driving my car, I'll be listening to things on my voice memos just to think, okay, where does this go? Mm-hmm. Because that's, again, for me, that's part of the real fun of it, is just not knowing where it's going to go. And I love that. I think I'm happiest when the song's half written. I think in life, that's when I'm happiest.
Well, because then you don't haven't put in all the hard work yet.
Exactly.
Because that comes the not so fun sometimes part. But then, like we said, it's just you keep the pipes clean, you keep everything flowing, and it's mm-hmm. so much easier to pick it back up the next time.
Yeah, for sure.
And the next time comes a lot sooner.
What are songs that you've written that, and again, I feel odd asking this question because I don't know how I would respond to this, but what are songs that you've written that you feel really proud of?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, because like I said, there's so many, one, and then two, just the approach I've taken to them is also like very interesting. I think a lot about, you know, just like life and existing and, you know, how easy it is to screw things up and take things for granted that
for sure.
you haven't, like, both of my grandmothers are like getting up in age, so I've written songs about just, you know, how that feels mm-hmm. and to be looking back and going, man, like I didn't know like what the time was when I had it. And just those kinds of songs like that, where I'm like really taking an honest look at myself and how I have approached things. Mm-hmm. And like one of the songs I played for you earlier, Good Intentions, where it's like, I'm always trying to be the one driving, but sometimes I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And it's like a very like honest reflection. And those are the kinds of ones that are obviously like a little more inspired because they're coming from a place where I'm reflecting on myself. And I'm proud of those, one, because I'm, you know, finishing a song, but then two, it's like a true like representation of, you know, human life and mm-hmm. thinking about things that are sometimes kind of difficult topics to approach with yourself.
Yeah. It's when you write a good one, it's a very interesting feeling. I find, again, this is all just coming from my silly head. Because on one hand, there is this feeling of pride of, okay, I stand behind this thing and I'm really proud of what I made. And at the same time, there is this voice constantly screaming in my head of, okay, do the next one. And I think you kind of need that. Mm-hmm. As much as there are songs that I feel really, really proud that I've written, I always go back to that voice in my head that just says, now on to the next one. Like, you can pat yourself on the back later, on to the next one. But I can't help but enjoy that moment. Like, I think there is something really beautiful. And I think as I've gone through life more, I've given myself a little bit more leeway to enjoy that. Now my writing regimen's very different. Now I'm not as strict and regimented schedule-wise with my writing. But again, going back to the sort of creativity play, I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it's different now. And to me, it's, you know, it's been, I've written a lot of songs, but it's been 4 years since we did, this is going to be 5 years since we've done the last record, which is insane. And I had three back-to-back records there for a while. And in my head, it's just sort of like being okay with that. And knowing that I've written a lot of songs in those 4 or 5 years, and I've put a lot of songs out, just yeah. being okay that the process is changing too, as the art is changing. Do you find that you've, hey kitty, do you find that you've stuck with the process through and through, or do you feel that there is give there, that it has changed over time?
I think that's definitely changed a lot over time. I used to really write mostly exclusively from an emotional place, where it's like I'm trying to like process something that's going on in my life, or it's some big feeling I'm having about something that I don't know what to do with. And so I've just been trying to get away from just doing that, because I've written great songs that way, but also Like, I also don't want to have, like, big feelings all the time because that's kind of destructive.
Yeah. another thing I wanted to ask you about, I think this is kind of specific for what you do, too. How much do you feel that your songwriting, your art, plays into your present mood? There's some people that I know, when they write a song, it's like the emotions have to be on 11 in order to get there. Whereas for me, and again, I'm not saying this is the right way, this is just the path I've gone down, there's a complete disconnect there. I know it is sort of on some level that there's not really a disconnect there, that it's all you. But I never look at it that way. For you, do you feel those things are more closely paired, or do you feel like there is detachment?
I think, like I said, I write regularly, so I think it depends on if there's been some kind of, like, life event that's happened mm-hmm. that has, like, kind of influenced what I'm, like, sitting down to, like, think and write about. Like, I will go and, you know, see my grandma for a couple days back in New York and New Jersey and visit everyone, and then come back and just have a lot of thoughts about that. But it's just more of, like, a processing tool rather than I'm feeling it, like, all very deeply. I think when I was, like, younger, that was more of the way I approached it, where my feelings were at 11 and I had no other way to get it out
it's
other than
to
just write
it down.
Yeah, it was just a way to, like, process how everything feels. But, like, there's plenty of, you know, feelings I will have that also, like, for the sake of the song, I will blow out of proportion because it'll be fun.
That's what you got to do sometimes. Yeah, for me, it is a little different because the last 5 years now, time flies. I have written exclusively in character. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is I never think that, not only on an emotional level, but that my life is interplaying with the characters' lives. And what I find is, and I think this is just a testament to, without sounding conceited, I think it's a testament to doing that well. People in my life will say, oh, is that what that song's about? Relaying it to something in their life or in my life or whatnot. And to me, it's like it doesn't even enter into the equation. And maybe it's applicable. Maybe there's some level of applicability there. Oh, yeah, I guess that is kind of like something that's happened in my life. But I never, on the creative level, I never think of it like that. I always think of it as completely unrelated. And that's been something, again, in the last half a decade now, that has been really interesting. People will draw those parallels where my brain isn't drawing them. But I think that that's just what I think that's what fiction does. I think that the only reason we care about my favorite book of all time is Moby Dick. I've never been a whaler, but there are, to me, like that is the story that affects me more than anything, because I contrast my life to that story, and it's incredibly powerful, even though when he was writing that book, I'm not in the equation at all. But I think that's what the best art does. I think
Absolutely.
The best art, it is that level. It is an applicability to your own life that has that effect on you.
The best art is art that the listener or viewer or reader can put themselves in. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, like, universally, it seems, the art that everyone is drawn to is stuff like that, where people can either see themselves in it or put themselves in it or immerse themselves in it in a way that helps them, like, really feel deeply connected to it. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, we write for ourselves to a degree, sure.
Oh,
but
I do, yeah.
We write to be perceived. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not necessarily only writing for ourselves, so no one else to ever hear it ever.
I guess the most concise way I can think to say it, because I'm certainly not a concise person, is that the I in my songs is never I. Mm-hmm. It's never me. Is the I in your songs always you? Or do you feel that there is play there as well?
I'd say there's play there. I've definitely written, like, story songs that I've written them. But I think when I do write those kinds of story songs, I do take sometimes elements of my own life to inform them. Or it's, like, you know, it's based on, like, a true story, but I wrote this song a little bit ago about this, like, murder that happened near where Tom's from. And I was
we
just
need
like
more good murder ballads in the world.
But it was just kind of like, yes, like, there was the real, like, facts about it, but essentially what happened is there was this guy who everyone was saying definitely did it, but nobody knew the truth. Like, nobody knew who actually did it. Mm-hmm. He just lived near where they found all the bodies. So they're like, oh, this guy did it. But I was like, well, in the court of public opinion, he's guilty. And the real murderer could just be sitting back and just watching someone else take the blame for it. And I was like, well, that's like a great story.
Yeah, we need we need more stuff like that in the world. Like,
because that's fascinating to me. Where it's sure. just like you can sit there and you can see, you know how that happens, and you can watch it happen, and people never think it's going to be them who are doing it, but then you look back and you go, whoa. So like the song is like kind of from just like a third person perspective, but then also at the end I kind of tie it into like the actual murderer's perspective, where it's like, I watch them dance around the stake, hungry are the lips of fate, like just watching like they burn this man in the court of public opinion for something he didn't do.
Yeah, I can't recall if I've talked about this on the podcast or not, so I'll keep it brief. But the closest thing I've really ever come to a murder ballad in recent years is been this song called Let Go of Mom, which is I've never put out before, but I've played it quite a few times, about these two brothers that are bickering about pulling the plug on their mother, which it sounds like not the most exciting content for a song, subject matter for a song. But I really think I think it really works, and it might be the closest I get to a maybe I just need to sit down and really write a murder ballad. But it's to me, it's the closest I could get without feeling like I'm forcing it, you know. And murder ballads are really hard to write.
They are.
They really, really, like all of those forms that have been around forever. They're really difficult to nail.
But it's when you really do nail it make feels it shitty. Yeah. Oh, it's so easy to make it.
That's a very good way of saying it. Yeah.
Yes. It's the problem. The thing that helped me with at least that song, and again, I really haven't played it for anybody because it's kind of new, so I don't really know. It could be really shitty. But just when there's like something that happens in terms of, you know, a murder or something along those lines, like I looked at that situation, I took that picture, but then I thought about, well, what does that make me think about that and think about people and what is like the picture of our society that created? Yeah. And then I tried to look at it from that perspective where it was like, oh, like this man's guilty before he's even tried. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's like, oh yeah, this guy did it.
And the best, I find the people who work in those forms the best recognize that what they're writing needs to, this is a difficult thing I think to express, but it needs to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. There's something, we actually talked about this when Dylan Smucker was in here, another really great songwriter around town. There's something kind of icky about finger wagging in songs that I think both Dylan and I really have an allergy to. We don't like that. And with songs like that, oftentimes you can feel that happening before the song even starts.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with something like a murder ballad or something that is based in a topical song, the finger wagging shows up really quick. And the people that I think really, really work in those forms the best can somehow transcend that. And can somehow show you something that that transcends that basic idea. So whatever you're sort of, it simultaneously gets at the gut reaction that's there, but also brings it into this bigger context of like just who we are as people.
A great example of that, in my opinion, is Bob Dylan's Hurricane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where it's, you know, that is like very explicitly like a very, at the time, like controversial, topical event.
But even that, there's play with reality, and even that, there's play with like, it has to, and that's what I love.
It ties into those greater themes of like, well, how do we treat each other? Like, it's the same thing where it's like he was guilty before he was even on trial.
And of course, Bob is fascinating because
for many reasons,
he's fascinating for many reasons. But he, in his mind, I mean, it's funny to hear him talk about that song years later because it's like what really happens is irrelevant. The important thing to him is the song. He's like, that's the thing, and that's. Again, I think as an artist, that's the only way you can do it. Like, there are a lot of people who work in that world. You know, someone that I admire greatly, someone like Woody Guthrie, that I just absolutely adore, and someone that has really shaped who I am as a person. He wrote very topical songs, but his were in that finger wagging world.
Yeah, which he wrote like protest songs.
Yeah, exactly. So which has its place in the world. I think that's, we need people who do those things. And again, that's one of the reasons why he's been an influence on my life. But then you look at someone like Bob, and I think other people who approach it in that way, it sort of transcends the time in which it's written in. And that's a very, very hard thing. It's a very hard thing to do. Like, a lot of times they are changing is like that. Obviously the album is like that because it's so topical. People who can get away with that, and it's not even getting away, people who can write at that level, I'm always inspired by that because it's so hard to do. It's so hard to step away from putting the ego in there.
I feel like a lot of his songs are from that like third person perspective too, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting for as prolific a songwriter as he is, where he has countless things that he's written that all resonate really deeply with people, but at the same time they're all not necessarily reflections of him. Like they might be in like an abstract sense, but
and that's what I think is also it's only through being so personal, and when I say personal I don't mean writing about your own life, but it's only through that search for whatever that thing is in life that you can find that universality. Because universality doesn't come from trying to be universal. It comes from trying to find who you are. And then, again, going back to fiction, the way that we move through the world, I really, truly believe, is through stories. And we look at those stories, and we put ourselves in those stories. And the people, again, the people who can get away with that, I think that's the ultimate form of songwriting, is to recognize what's happening there. And I think to me that's what that ick is when a lot of people try to do it, is like it feels like you're missing the point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where people can listen to that album Times They Are Changing 100 years from now and it's still going to emotionally resonate in the way that it did in 1964.
Yeah. I think word choice is very important.
Absolutely.
There I am, and Tom is too. We're both like extremely nitpicky about the words that you use, because like just using one word that's like something that's not like absolutely timeless can really just like date your song so fast. Sure. And it's like, if either of us are listening to a song the other one's written in, or just going like, it's like, all right, whatever that made that face happen, like we're getting and rid of that.
It's different the way that I do things too, because for me, a lot of it is because it's character driven. A lot of it is what the character is presenting to the world. Like, is this something in their vocabulary? Is this something that they would say regionally? Is this those things come in, which is sort of another layer of convolution, maybe. Yes. But like another layer of complexity on top of it is like, is this, maybe the vocabulary is very limited, but they know one really big word, or maybe they have a really big vocabulary, but they're flubbing this sentence, and those things I think are really fun to play with.
And at the same time, it has to be genuine to the storyteller.
Yes.
Which is always the balance, where it's like, I'm not from where Tom's from. We're from very different places. Mm-hmm. So when I approached that song,
where are you from?
I was born in Brooklyn. Originally. Okay. But then I grew up in Rockland County. Gotcha. Outside of the city.
Okay.
So that's where, obviously, a very different frame of reference. Yes. From like 800 person town in Western. Yes. Maryland. Like very, very different perspective on things. And so I know, like, I need to be like extra careful if I'm like going to look at a story that's not, mm-hmm. like, you know, completely something that's within like
your frame of reference.
My frame of reference. Yeah. Exactly. And I can't be, you know, making it something that it might not be, because of, as we talked about earlier, it's just like the cultural nuances of America itself. And that's just America. I'm not even talking about the rest of the world. It's just
so
America.
It's varied. It's vast. So vast. Yeah.
So it's just being really careful to also not be telling a story that someone will look at and go, why the fuck is this person telling this story? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times too, especially with topical songwriting, but I think this just happens in songwriting in general, there is this feeling of, why bother telling that story? And it's hard to get away from that sometimes. You listen to a song and think, okay, why did someone bother writing this? Mm-hmm. Is it telling me something about the world that I didn't already know, or tell me something that I did already know in an interesting way, from an interesting angle? That's very difficult to do. And I think you need to go through the process of writing a million songs that don't need to be written in order to get the one that should be written. But that's a hard... That's a hard place to get to as a writer, because when you do finish a song, you're like, okay, well, did I really need to say this?
No, but that's something you learn as you write. Like, when we all started writing music, it was not, like, we were writing a song, we're like, oh, shit, like, yeah, I wrote a song. This is great. I'm going to show everybody this, like, song I wrote, because
you're proud
it's the same thing as when you're, like, growing up, when your world is only as big as, like, your immediate family.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's your whole world. You don't understand that there's things outside of that.
Yeah, you just don't.
And as you, like, write more songs and you grow as a songwriter and you just grow as a person and experience the world, your world just grows just a little bit bigger every time. And then you can go, well, yeah, like, I'm not playing any of the songs I wrote back in, like, 2017. Like, nobody needs to hear that. Yeah, I wasn't saying anything special.
I feel the same way. Again,
at the end of the day, glad I don't have any of them recorded out.
Oh, see, that's the problem, is I do. And I think that, to me, that was a conscious decision. The first record that we did came out in 2017. And I remember very, very clearly in that moment saying, okay, you're not going to get away from this. Like, this will be there. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean you're handcuffed to it, but it means that this will be a part of your life. I feel very much like I moved past those things. But when I do look back, I can feel a sense of pride in those things, even if I would do it very differently now. And even if there are those moments of, like, oh, that's not how I would do it, or I didn't like that song the way that I thought I did.
Well, do you ever take old songs and try to rewrite them?
No. I try to keep pushing, on pushing on. Yeah.
Well, if you're ever stuck in a rut, that could be a good way to
That's a very smart way to do it.
Back out of it, something like you haven't touched in years, and then you're like, well, how would I reapproach this and just rewrite something about
good
it?
Good ideas today. I'm gonna steal all of these.
Got them all on records. There, so. Yeah,
exactly. Everyone's free to steal.
Being a composer, lyrical songwriter, a lot of these ideas I'm definitely making note of. Like, just writing, like, recording or writing down little things, or even something like that, like revisiting something from. Because so many years go by, you've totally changed as a musician, and then you have this kind of skeleton of something you used to be into. You could totally change how it works and everything.
Yeah, fresh eyes.
It's a lot of good ideas. Man, oh, man. Well, I got to say, I am so excited that you did this. This has been awesome. This is one that I know this was like a relatively quick, normally we book out kind of far. This was a relatively quick one that we got on here, but we've been really excited about this one, so I'm super, super happy you did it.
The song
sounded great, as we expected them to.
Thank you.
But yeah, thank you for doing this. This was a ton of fun.
Thank you guys for having me. Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Of course.
Nice, nice.
Cool.
That's great. See you at the next poker night.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Now you have to come.
Now I have to go. Well, you keep having them on nights I teach.
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess you guys probably start kind of.